two other kids who were about 17 or 18, a guy and a girl, show up, and they knew my friend, and they had just gotten beat up by the same group of kids in the same place. And my friend told me that those kids hang out at the transit every weekend, and that they always are hassling homeless people, and that the transit security does nothing. And I'm just like, you know, I don't personally understand that way of dealing with each other, especially with homeless people, just because they're homeless. I'm like, hello, like the founders of this country came here because they didn't have anything in there in England, you know, when America was first founded. So in a certain way, the settlers of America were homeless, so we should respect people who are like in that position here. I don't get it. And whatever, so I'm going to see my friend today, and I just basically want to see if some justice can be done here.
Dig it. Did you talk to anybody else who was a witness to this?
He has a bunch of people. I basically, because there was so much kind of intensity going on at the time on Pacific, with the security guard screaming at us and my friend angry and stuff, I basically just grabbed my friend and got him away from them. Because I didn't want him, like, getting any fights, you know, more than what had happened, because, you know, one of the problems with being homeless is that when stuff like that happens to you, sometimes you feel like nobody's listening and nobody cares, right? And it tends to make you more angry. And people who don't understand that you may have just been beaten up or something, they see that, and they just judge you because you're homeless. And I didn't want that to happen to my friend, so I just got him away. He told me there are witnesses, and he can get them. I'm going to see him at 12:30, and I'm going to talk to him about all this. I'm also going to be giving him your number.
Excellent.
That's okay.
No, that would be great. We'd love to have him call in and talk more about this. Or if he's not comfortable talking on the air, he can call. Well, he can call the phone line and say that he'd like to talk off the air. We can meet after the show. It depends on what he wants to do. But I'd love to hear what he has to say. Also, do you remember what the security guard looked like?
Yeah, he was an older, I believe, Hispanic guy. He had a mustache and I think a goatee. I'm not sure. I remember the mustache, graying hair, very overweight, short guy.
And
very, very non-compassionate.
It sounds like he also was violating, you know, the rules and procedures that the city hires the metro for.
I mean, I couldn't believe that a security guard was sitting there giving my friend shit, telling him that he was going to have my friend arrested if my friend didn't go away and stop screaming. And I'm like, hello, you just watched this person get beaten by 20 people.
So yeah. Your friend confirmed that this was one of the people, this was the metro guard who watched?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and the metro guard didn't deny it. He said to the metro guard right in front of me, he said, you saw the whole thing. And the metro guy was like, just get out of here. You know? And I'm just like, excuse me, you do not treat people like that.
Now, did you see any of the remainder of this? Because 20 to 25 is an extremely large crowd of people. Although I know that on Friday and Saturday nights you get, it's just youth city down there.
Yeah.
But did you see any large crowds of people when you got back to the metro?
No. I didn't stay on the street. I mean, my purpose, and last night in my intervention, hey, my friend there who got beaten up, hey, like, I personally picked two people right now on the streets in this city who I really try to reach out and help with all my best. And last night, witnesses or whatever wasn't really my concern. My concern was that he was a homeless person and that he was just violated and that he was very angry and that he needed to be away from people. Where he could just sit and get quiet and get calm again. So that's what I did with him.
That's great. No, I mentioned it because I got to ask you these questions to see if, you know, if anything was, you know, you observed anything further.
I didn't have time to observe anything. I didn't even see who did it to him. You know, I mean, I was going to go back. We were on our way to the transit thing, but when the transit cop told him to get off the property and that he was going to have him arrest, I didn't want any more problems. So I didn't bother going looking around or looking for that group. I just was like, grabbed him and like, let's get out of here.
Were you also ordered off the property?
No. The metro police didn't know anything about me. He was just screaming at my friend.
Now, do you know where this incident actually happened on the metro property? Did he describe that to you?
No. From what I understood, you have a leaning area right on Pacific where the buses exit. It's more towards the beach. That, I believe, is where it happened. I'm not really sure. I'd have to ask my friend.
Well, really encourage him to call in if he's up for it, because I think it not only is, you know, is important for us to know about it, but, you know, it's important for us to get the facts straight here, and I appreciate
it'd be great if someone could help him, too. I mean, it was really You know, I mean, my biggest concern, you know, is that that Metro cop, what he did last night wasn't just a violation to my friend. It was a violation to everyone in this town because he sent a direct message to those kids that it's okay to go out and beat people up. You know, and like, that's wrong.
Yeah, that's not, well, actually, you actually saw this, him ordered off the area, and the Metro man gave no indication of what his concern was about your friend's behavior, right?
He didn't care anything about my friend.
Right, but you didn't say, the man's been selling drugs, this man has been beating people up. He just said, leave, right?
Yeah, no, my friend doesn't sell drugs, and my friend doesn't do anything like that. My friend just, you know, I mean, I think that a lot of homeless people, you know, everyone has their issues, but these are people, you know, and, like, my friend is just trying to, like, get his head together without, like, falling into, like, the guts of hell, you know, and, like, I'm trying to help him do that. And, like, when he gets treated the way he got treated last night, it's hard for anybody in his situation to feel self-respect when everyone around them is like, I don't give a shit about you. Oh, you just got beaten up too bad. Get off my property. You know, where is the humanity here? Where is the compassion? Where is the love in this society?
Well, apparently there was at least one person who gave a shit last night, and I want to thank you for being that person, man.
No problem. I'm going to have him call you. I'm going to see him at 12:30, so we'll call you around 1 if I can find him. Is that cool?
That's cool. And if you have trouble getting in, keep trying, because you only have one line into the studio, but I'll try to make sure the phone gets freed up around 1 o'clock.
Okay, I'm just going to write the number down. Can you give me the number one more time, please?
Yeah, the number is 427.
Yeah.
3772.
Okay, cool.
And if you want to catch me off air, you won't get a me, but you get a voicemail. It's 423-4833.
Cool.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
So, doesn't sound good, folks. But phone lines are open if you wish to call in and give your own thoughts on what you've heard. And perhaps add, if you have a piece of the story, it's 427-3772, 427-FRSC, here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. And we're almost coming up on 11 o'clock. We have a quick story here from, looks like Australia. Singer supports homeless protest. Singer-songwriter Neil Murray has thrown his weight behind a protest by homeless people in Darwin this morning. That it was back on May 8th. Murray has written hit songs for Warrumpy Band and Christine Ann, but this morning in Darwin Civic Park, he played his Longgrass Band song to a group of itinerants and supporters protesting Darwin City Council bylaws. The bylaws make it an offense to, get it here folks, sleep in public in a public place between sunset and sunrise and allow council officers to remove itinerants' belongings from public places. He says, sleeping under the stars should not be against the law. In many ways, it's part of the Darwin scene, he said. I kind of feel reassured to come back to Darwin and see people still around, you know, long grassers. I think it's that they're very much an identifiable and prominent part of the local culture. So we got itinerants and long grassers for all you vocabulary buffs. For instead of hobos, utes, homeless, undesirable transient elements, we got some more colorful terms south of the border. And here's a report from Portland, Oregon, from the Streets Roots activist, journalist, and photographer who was traveling with Dignity Village, Patricia Von Annis. She's been writing a lot of letters back and forth fighting this Title 14 up in Portland, which is a constriction of the rights of everybody, but also particularly people who are outside, like our no-sitting laws are here in Santa Cruz. A couple of days ago, she writes, I listened to the tape of our first appearance on KBOO's new twice-monthly show about the homeless, Hole in the Bucket. Three Street Roots poets and staff were on, as was Mark Jolin, to discuss Title 14. Following is most of what Mark said. Also, the city attempts to sweep the homeless out of the downtown every year around this time to sanitize it for the annual Rose Festival, which runs 3 weeks in June. They figured to sneak this revised law into place without any public hearings, and without people being aware in time to fight them. They figured wrong. Today, while gathering signatures, we heard several horror stories from teens and adults who sleep on the streets. Here's one. I was awakened by a cop kicking me in the head around midnight the other night. He handcuffed me and put me in a cruiser while checking for warrants. There were none. I have no criminal record. After I was released, the cop was cutting up my sleeping bag with a big buck knife and was snarling to me, "Get out. I don't care where you go. Go anywhere." The teens told us they observed another teen get an exclusion ticket in the park, and as the kid walked away, the cop went after him, knocked him down, and kicked him in the head and bloodied him up, then let him up and walked away. The other teens tried to ask the cop why he was roughing up the kid, and he threatened them and ordered them to forget what they'd seen or they'd be next. We met them at the site of the Food Not Bombs serving dinner in another section of the park blocks. All this is in Portland, Oregon. One man told us it varies. He gets waken up by one cop giving him donut and hot coffee, another driving by and yelling it's time to get up and giving him a friendly wave, but every so often getting roughed up. He says that in lieu of arrests, they mostly get kicked around. But there are no more and no less incidents than before the camping ordinance was declared unconstitutional up in Portland. Some people are talking about doing a big camp out downtown later this summer to again test this ordinance, since the city declared it would enforce it in spite of the ruling, claiming the ruling came from a lower court and therefore is not valid. Interesting. I mentioned doing a big Camputo groups of teens, and they are all for it. We have a state law and a city ordinance that says the camping ordinance cannot be enforced if the mayor declares a state of emergency, so the idea I heard in Santa Cruz to do this massive camp out and force the state of emergency would work here. And actually, it would kind of go the other way around. We don't think we could get a state of an emergency by a massive camp out, though actually, who knows? That's an idea that really has never been floated here. They've declared shelter emergencies at least three times in Santa Cruz, 90, 95, and 98. But they've never declared actual housing emergencies that would allow for immediate suspension of the camping ban and things of that sort. As I understand it from Michael Schmidt, who did some homeless issues work before he got enmeshed in this current campaign for supervisor, and he's been still recovering from that one apparently. But it's a good idea, the idea of if this council is serious about dealing with the realities that people outside have no housing, then you have to declare an emergency to set up campgrounds for them. And all these excuses that everybody in the world will come to town, well, then you have you regulate intake if that's what you want to do. You know, you require some sort of residency proof or social service justification, although that's not something I would support. But the fact is that the city council, whether it's Rotkin or Hernandez or Kennedy or Sugar or Crone, are unwilling to propose anything of the kind until we get it together and have the kinds of protests that make it impossible for them not to act. And we were actually at that point 2 years ago in 2000 when David Silva and others were fasting every night or doing a kind of a revolving fast. And others were organizing on the streets and coming in with colorful and humorous pie for the worst homeless city council member protests and sit-ins in city council, all kinds of stuff, sleep-ins. And that produced this sort of token move by, I think it was a real move by Mayor Sugar at that time to try to set up safe sleeping zones. But it was so rarefied, involved so few homeless activists, and was so tentative and dependent upon having a fourth vote that it went nowhere. When he got his fourth and fifth votes, he's refused to do anything. I ran into Sugar last night on the streets. This is a man who, I think he's either returned zero or one phone calls in 3.5 years. And that's not because I've been personally mean or nasty to him. He's made a couple of political choices, and he plays this game pretty well. He sees some people as pariahs, characterizes them that way, and then frightens other people by suggesting that they'll be treated in that fashion too unless they toe the line. Politics as usual in Santa Cruz. Continuing the story from Portland, however, which I seemed to be talking about before and then left, one of the most common problems told us today up in Portland is people losing their ID to the jails, not getting their personal belongings, papers, money, ID back when they get released from jail. This is happening on a regular basis. One of the ordinances to which we object in the Title 14 group is on that very subject. Currently, the city code says the jail is obligated to return your stuff. The suggested new language says the jail must make a reasonable attempt to return it. That allows them to keep it, basically. That is number 14C30.050, safekeeping and prisoner property. Pretty slimy stuff to steal from the poorest of the poor. Pretty slimy stuff. But if you don't have justification for arresting people anyway, then you become legally liable. So they're trying to make it easier for the authorities to continue to do what they're doing, essentially to treat people illegally. And that's what the Right to Sleep Summit was all about. And I think that's what we're going to turn to now, some of the tape from that Right to Sleep Summit. Let's see what we got here. Well, yeah, we'll give you a little from the Right to Sleep Summit. This was actually before the summit formally began. It started on Friday afternoon last week, a week ago that is, and then went through till Sunday evening. And people began to arrive at Thomas Levitt's house. Well, here you hear us talking to Santa Barbara activist, us being me, and I guess there are a couple other people, but mainly me, Nancy McCready, who came all the way up from Santa Barbara with Bob Hansen and Earl and some beautiful wolves, which she had in her vehicle. These are white wolves. Incredible. Anyway, here she is.
Barbara, however, is rolling ahead.
Rolling ahead, yeah. All of a sudden, the compassionate people are coming out of the woodwork, and we're talking the non-compassionate people into providing that solution for Motor Housing Park, which should take in about 150 rigs.
Wow. And what percentage of the folks who are in vehicles does that cover in Santa Barbara?
Well, probably about half of them.
The other half? I see. Well, it's half-assed, but better than no ass at all.
Yes, we're working to see if there's a possible permit system that could be happening, or take some of those 3 to 5 signs down, non-sleeping between 3 and 5 a.m. Signs down in certain areas of the town, and let certain numbers of RVs park in certain areas.
Well, at least you've defeated the, or at least put back for a while, that no parking anywhere in town for RVs.
We put that back. We pushed it back, you know, for right now. And that's what the task force did push back, because the city council decided they didn't want to see any more true criminalization rather than instead of providing for solutions. So that, you know, we've got a pretty progressive city council right now. It's amazing, you know.
Mayor Marty Bloom has joined your task force.
No, she has joined our Homes on Wheels board.
Oh.
We're a nonprofit. We have filed for nonprofit status.
She moved into a van in solidarity?
No, she just decided that she wanted to be part of the creation of a motor housing park for people, because she feels that there is a hole in the continuum of care system.
No.
That we call.
What are you talking about? A hole in the continuum. The continuum of carelessness.
And that's the lack of housing. So they want to see. Excuse me, I've got a cold. They want to
smoking.
See,
I might have.
Yeah, I'm smoking too, but I've got a cold also. And they seem to want to patch up some of those holes.
Right.
So.
Well, you
although
know
HUD money isn't going to be coming our way, because we are not a fixed dwelling. We have wheels under us. We do have enough philanthropists and enough rich people in Santa Barbara where we can probably raise the money, and Habitat for Humanity is somewhat interested in helping us build that motor housing park. So, you know, we're getting there.
Whoa. So how... Sounds good, actually. I mean, my mind is running in 7 different directions, because I have flyers to put together here. I see this this infamous Bob Hansen.
He's fixing up his campsite.
Fixing up his campsite here in Santa Cruz, in the backyard of Thomas Levitt. How many people came with you?
Just Earl and Paul drove up. Paul Woodward. Woodward, I guess his name is. It's hard for me to remember everybody's last name.
Oh, sure. Be that way.
And he's going to probably be here, because he was showing some interest. He's on our Homes on Wheels board.
The man we just spoke to.
Earl.
No, the other one.
Which one?
He came up and gave me these 2 number 2 pencils.
I don't know.
I better go find out who he is. He could be one of those dangerous homeless people.
Yeah, he might be.
No. We're talking with Nancy McCready of Homes on Wheels in Santa Barbara. Thank you, Nancy. We'll be back to you again and again.
I'm sure you will, Robert.
And again. arriving on the scene is that notorious chef de chef, India Joe's restaurant. You were no longer affiliated with that.
That's right. I dumped the profit-making world for the burgeoning world of the non-profit and the zero profit.
I see. You're still into zero profit.
Zero.
A little landlording thrown in.
Ha, ha, ha.
Ha, ha. We're talking to Joe Schultz, who has supplied food for countless numbers of homeless protests. Are you getting paid for that India Joe's restaurant sign there? That is pre-advertising.
Of course, the India Joe's doesn't exist anymore.
It is an idea whose time has come
gone. India Joe's is on the streets.
Indeed. Well, now we're talking. Yeah. Let me take you back to on the radio. Your name is?
I'm not going on the radio. Sorry. My name's Michelle, and I'm with Seattle's 10th City.
Right. And how was the trip down? Was, you know, grueling? Or, and I know you're going to just turn around and head back upon, Saturday night?
It was pretty uneventful. It was fun. We stayed overnight in Camp Dignity. Got to know those folks a little bit.
Was it your first meeting with the Dignity people?
No, not mine, but for others who are with us, yes, it was their first time.
And you guys actually predate Dignity.
March of 2000.
And before that, of course, it was 10 City 2 and 10 City 1.
That's right.
And were you connected with any of those efforts up in Seattle?
Personally, yeah.
Wow. Because you were working with Cher or a Wheel? Or?
I started working with Wheel in 95, I think it was. But seriously, I'm not talking on the record. Staff for Cher Wheel don't talk for the group.
This is off the record.
Yep.
But it's merely just sort of what's been happening. Anything? Did you stop in Eugene on the way down?
We didn't.
I know that I called Eugene, and they're kind of hard to find a functioning homeless group. Although I guess they have that program going on.
Who else is coming that you know of?
Well, we have Santa Barbara is here already. You met Bob, and of course there's Nancy who came with him, and Earl. And there's Berkeley's coming. San Francisco, San Jose is supposed to be coming. They're the closest city, but they're the hardest to get.
And then there are rumors on the internet that Toronto is coming.
Rumors. I've never heard. We heard that Alaska was coming, but that actually somebody called from Alaska, I'm told. But I have never been able to track down anybody at Camp Goodwill, as I've heard it was called. So I don't know.
In Toronto, that's.
Have you actually heard?
Yeah, we have.
Never been able to have direct communication. We can try and call him or something. All right, well, let me see if I find you this agenda. Who are we talking to?
J.C. Orton from Night on the Streets Catholic Worker in Berkeley.
Uh-huh. You one of these criminal types that have, for example, been responsible for the infamous People's Cafe in the middle of People's Park in 1990?
Well, I wasn't with Dorothy Day House back in those days, but yes, I currently am with Dorothy Day House. I'm actually with both houses, the house that I founded about 5 years ago, as well as Dorothy Day House. And they do have a great breakfast program, and they did have a great People's Park Cafe, yes.
So Berkeley has been successful in, they haven't been able to get their own anti-homeless laws lifted or even put on the lowest ring of enforcement, but I guess they got the 647J, which is used in some cases in Berkeley of prosecutions of homeless people.
Well, that's a selective law. It depends on which cop is applying it, if he wants to apply it, or if he wants to get somebody to move along. Probably the best move-along policy is finding somebody who has a warrant or an FTA, a failure to appear, out waiting for them. The police will run that person, find out that is in existence, and regardless of what 647J meant or the moratorium on it, they have the ability to say move along or hop in the squad car. They like to do that on Friday nights, knowing full well that the next time you'll be able to get out will be Monday morning when you are released on your OR, but you end up doing 2.5 days in jail for the fact. You know what I mean?
Perhaps a couple of federal lawsuits for false arrest would be helpful.
Federal law sounds interesting. There's lawyers that would like to pursue that. I think what it takes is a matter of tolerance, at the very least, by the city. I think the city in the years has changed greatly, but I think the city could go further and not tolerate homeless, but love all their neighbors and not necessarily use a lot of labels.
I'm talking about the police department. If they insist on abusing the spirit, it sounds like the letter of the 647J law. Are you saying they only do this with warrants?
It's a convenient thing because it's a matter of applying it. They're supposed to give it a low priority, or actually there's supposed to be a moratorium. But I still see people that come to our meals complaining about the fact that they are being harassed at the very least, and then ticketed for something sort of on the side, rather than not necessarily something to the fact that you have you're parking yourself out here in the middle of the field and trespassing, so to speak, or breaking the anti-lodging law. They find something else. Oh, let's see, let's look through your bag. Oh my God, I found a joint. You know, it's that sort of thing. They find some other method to
what is the crime that they're supposedly investigating?
The crime of homelessness. It's against the law to be homeless.
I understand, but what specific code section do they claim to be going after?
Well, it's like anything. If you have prior arrests for some menial situation, usually things turn into a failure to appear for some menial thing, and then you end up on the books. They got a sheet on you. It progresses from there. They know who you are. They want to move you along.
At the conference, we're going to be talking about ways to both individually and in groups, you know, resist this kind of criminalization. And, you know, obviously the best way to do it is with a group of people, I think. But as an individual, you can always claim, first of all, your question is, do you have a reasonable cause to stop me? Or I should say reasonable suspicion to stop. Do you believe that a crime is being committed is the first question. Now, of course, it's easy to say that when you're talking to some character with a gun, a badge, and a dog in the vehicle. You know, I understand that. But in fact, if you're doing it in a public place where people can see this, and if it becomes an established mode of process, it may be an effective counter to that.
Perhaps the best counter to that is education. Those people that are stopped, if they are informed of their rights prior to the police stopping them, knowing that they don't have to give them their blood type and everything else, as the case may be, basically they identify themselves and they ask, what is the situation? Why am I being stopped? Knowing full well they don't have to answer all these questions that the police might want.
Or allow for searches.
Exactly.
Well, there you have it, a quick course in constitutional law from J.C. and Uncle Robert.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Watching as these four walls come closing in on me, I'm a busting out of here, gonna set my spirit free and stride. Throw on the saddle, cinch it up real tight. Jump up on that pony's back and ride, ride, ride. Ride into the sunset of a western prairie night. Each hand.
So how are we feeling today? Let's see if we can get that crank up just a little bit. Maybe down, I don't know. Depends on which way you want to go.
And as you can hear, the music was rolling. Following up on the song, you get a little music in the background here. These are all homeless musicians, and we have volunteers coming in from out of the area. And a couple of our locals, Mark Levy, composed the local song. 999 Points of Light, about Sandra Loringer, the homeless woman the antique dealer downtown, served food to homeless women and men alike, and then got jailed for a month. Compliments of Marty Wormhout and local VA and the local judges when she refused to stop feeding. And because of her courage and that of others, we were able to break the ban on serving free food, which continues to be raised in different localities. Oakland is trying to bar people from serving free food. You can read about that in the latest issue of Street Spirit, the homeless newspaper that I write for, and other senators like Linda LeMaster, Becky Johnson write for, Sherry Conable. Give a call if you can't find a copy on the streets. They've been kind of hard to find. To Becky at 429-8529, and she can get you some copies. It's $1 if you're not homeless, and it's free if you are, and you can actually sell it and make money if you are homeless. So give a call to 429-8529, and you'll get some satisfaction and some interesting news at the same time. You're tuned to 96.3 FM, free radio. This is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. We got lots of civil rights this morning. Today is May 12th. Symmetrically turned around. It's your chance to call in. 427-3772 is the phone line. Haven't had too many callers today, and that's too bad because we got some really important stuff going on in downtown Santa Cruz. I think what we're going to do is turn back to downtown Santa Cruz, and I'll let fly at you with a few interviews that we heard last night on the streets, and then get back to the summit, so we can kind of do this dodge and weave deal, where we give you a little here and then go back to a little there. If anytime you want to call in and discuss issues, I'm in the studio. Give me a call, 427-3772.
Here about 5 to 10 in front of the Pacific. Wow, the Pacific Trading Company, which has migrated across the street to next to Jackson's Shoes. It's Saturday, May 11th, and we're talking to a Rolling Stones fan. Your name, sir?
Cool. Tomorrow they go on sale. Please help me see the Rolling Stones, please.
We'll just call you Spear Anything.
No, you won't.
No, all right. What should we call you?
Kuo.
So you say you saw the incident tonight.
No, I didn't. I saw the cops.
What?
I saw the cops.
What happened? So that...